OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Okay, so with us now, a player who, as I'm sure you all know, enjoyed huge success at Leinster. Debut back in 2011, signed off lifting Heineken Champions Cup in Bilbao in 2018. He has made the move to Ulster and things have gone very well. Quarter-final in the Heineken Champions Cup against Leinster, where Ulster put in a really good performance. They've made the knockout stages again until, well, you know what happened. And he has signed a two-year contract extension to boot. We are talking about Irish international Geordie Murphy. Geordie, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Doing all right, thank you. Thanks for having me on. So, like everyone else, kind of hoping for a bit of clarity in the next few weeks. But for the moment, just have to bide my time and tip away, train away and try to stay sane, you know?
Staying sane is definitely the key part. You're up in Belfast.
Yeah, I've been up here now. I was down at the start of March in Dublin, visiting family and stuff, but kind of when we got word that there was probably going to be a major lockdown, and we just kind of decided probably best off. We have a place up here in Belfast just to self-isolate up here, just because didn't want to really be around the family and stuff, especially with older relatives and things like that. So just thought better off to be up here. Laura, my partner, works up here, and we have all our things up here now, you know, we're very much settled, so we just decided to come back.
How has it been? How have you been filling your time? What kind of training can you do?
So just before they kind of kicked us out of Ulster for a while, I managed to nick a couple of weights and a watt bike and stuff, so I've got those in the garage, which is great. So I do that maybe 2 or 3 days a week, and then I've got a couple of playing fields not too far away, maybe 5-10 minute walk from my house, so 3 or 4 days a week, do a bit of running, some weights, just to try and keep ticking over. You know, I don't want to go back whenever that may be and kind of have a couple of weeks of trying to get up to speed. We're going to have that anyway, but I certainly don't want to be even further behind. So it's just about kind of ticking over, not overdoing it, because obviously we don't know when we are going to be back, but just to make sure I stay in decent shape anyway.
You've signed a two-year contract extension at Ulster. Was that straightforward, both sides of the agreement?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, look, I whenever a contract comes up, I always chat with my agent, Niall, and we definitely have a look around and stuff. But I kind of knew in the back of my mind that I wanted to stay. Like, I've been here nearly 2 years, and we've done some good things, but I definitely think we can do a lot more. And I've really enjoyed it. The people have embraced me here. I've made some lifelong friends. Fans have been absolutely brilliant. Playing squad's really good, definitely getting deeper, and looking forward to playing with them for the next 2 years. So yeah, it was like, I definitely looked around, but it was a bit of a no-brainer, really. I wanted to stick around. Like, we've done a bit, but I still think I've a lot more to give, and we can definitely go on and do a lot more.
Are you centrally contracted these days?
No, I'm not. No, I've never been centrally contracted. So just had to liaise with the provinces anytime I've done contracts. So no, I'm not one of those lucky few.
And increasingly, it is a fewer number, isn't it? I think the number is maybe down to 15, 16, 17. It used to be higher, but those central contracts aren't as plentiful as they used to be.
Yeah, so I hear. Yeah, look, they're obviously very tough to come by, and you need to have an incredible kind of consistency and level of play about you, so there are a lucky few that get there. I'm not going to say never, but I suppose I'm 29 now. You never know, my next one will be brilliant if it was a central, but I'm happy enough at the moment.
How are you suddenly 29? Veteran status is here. Wow, it goes by quickly.
I know, I do not know. I only turned 29 there about 2 weeks ago, and strange. Like, I remember because I made my debut for Leinster at 19 and it's pretty fresh face just out of school then. And to think that it's nearly 10 years on and I'm still playing professional rugby, I kind of incredibly lucky. But yeah, time does fly, I suppose, when you're having fun. Like, even whatever it was a week ago now, I've been 2 years since Bilbao and I just couldn't believe how quickly 2 years has gone by, you know? So I suppose, especially now as I get a bit older, I'm starting to realize that how quickly things move on. And like, look, it'd be great if I could play for another 10 years. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but just got to make the most and enjoy what's ahead of me now. First couple of years, I guess I was kind of didn't realize what was going on. It was just going on around me and I was just playing away. Whereas now, I suppose, looking back, I've got a lot more, how would you say, I don't take anything for granted anymore anyway. I'm just trying to enjoy it in the moment.
Yeah. Well, I guess you've seen teammates have to bow out prematurely as well, and that starts to hit home. When you and Niall Woods, your agent, former player, people will know him, sit down and talk, I guess when you do hit 28, 29, and you say you have a little look around, you do have to be diligent and look around for the best option, because when you get to a certain age, time really is a very important currency. You can't just waste 2-3 years on a club or a project that you don't believe in and have a rough 2-3 years. Like, next 4 or 5 years, this contract and the next one, that'll go a large way towards defining how you feel when you retire, most likely.
Yeah, definitely. 2 or 3 rough years and next thing you're not wanted by your club and kind of other clubs aren't so sure about you when you haven't been performing at the top level or you haven't been in a top environment. So, it's definitely a very big decision. Again, I suppose I keep saying I'm 29, but I still feel like I've got a bit in me anyway. So, yeah. And I certainly feel the environment I'm in at the moment, the coaching ticket, the players, not just that we've signed, but the lads coming through the academy. Like, I really think that Ulster now in the next couple of years are going to be a really deep squad, a lot of competition for places, and that's exactly where I want to be. I want to be in Ireland as well, obviously, because if you're not on the island of Ireland, you're not going to play for Ireland, and that's definitely still a big ambition for me. I hope not to lose that, because if I have ambitions to play for Ireland and I manage to do them, that means I'm doing a good job for my club. So I suppose it's kind of everyone's a winner in that occasion. So yeah, I'm excited for the next 2 years. I won't look any further than that really at the moment, but definitely excited for what lies ahead.
Have the demands on a back row changed much across your career? If we take it as about a decade, the game changes a lot all the time, different innovations, different body shapes. Are you doing things differently massively to how you were 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago, or has it been pretty similar?
I definitely, like, people talk about it, it's definitely gotten more physical. Like, maybe my body's aging a little bit, but at the start, when I first went in, I didn't really know what was going on. I got my opportunity around 2011, just after a World Cup year. There's a couple of banged up bodies and I just got an opportunity and got a couple of games, and probably looking back, I was a bit in over my head, but just got thrown in the deep end and just kind of did what I could do and managed to impress a couple of people, especially Joe Schmidt, who was obviously Leinster coach at the time, and he kept giving me opportunities. I suppose in the last couple of years, just trying to manage the body a bit better than I would have back then. I would have just kind of turned up to training, wouldn't have worried about much what I was eating, and just kind of did what I was told, never went out of my way to do the extra bit, which I probably have done in the last kind of 4 or 5 years, just because the game's even just developed that bit more in the last few years. Like, you don't get away with just doing, I wouldn't even say I did the bare minimum, but I didn't realize what I had to put in to get performances week in, week out. So, it's definitely gotten a lot physical, the game. And I guess everyone's just so professional now. Like, it's just, there's such tight turnarounds in games. It's so physical. You're so sore for most of the week. Most of the week's made up of trying to get yourself better for the following week. So I definitely think that's how the game's changed in the last few years.
I don't envy your position a lot, not least if you're over the ball in a jackal position and it's a free hit for one, two, sometimes three fellas coming in before a referee might blow his whistle.
Mm, yeah, it's a pretty attritional position now, I have to say. Like, even, God, I could name plenty of the boys, sure, everyone knows. Like, for example, like Dan Levy and Josh have both had bad knees. Jamie had to retire from a back injury. Sean O'Brien had plenty of injuries. Marcel Cazil had a double ACL. Like, you just look around Ireland, like, Jack O'Donoghue had a really bad knee injury as well. Owen Masterson at Connacht and stuff. So
Tommy O'Donnell, like, basically everyone you could mention.
Yeah, everyone's had some sort of major injury, and that's just, fortunately, part of the game. It's just trying to prepare your body for it as much as possible. But yeah, I suppose just where we are in on the pitch, like, if you're a prop, there's obviously some props that are very good over the ball, but a lot of the time when it comes to coming off set piece play, the back row is going to be the first person there, and the ruck just is a vicious enough environment. And unfortunately, sometimes you pick up knocks, and over a long span of a career, you're going to pick them up here and there. So definitely the back row is a pretty attritional spot to be in.
Are there any obvious or easier ways to clean up the ruck? I mean, it is the lifeblood of the game. You're a Joe Schmidt disciple. I'm sure he talks about the ruck as being everything, really, and so important. You want to keep it because it's so integral to what the game is, and yet you would like to make it some way safer for back rows and others getting their heads stuck in a lot.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one. Like, sure, you've got experts trying to do it and they still can't do it. So yeah. It's more, the only thing would be just that they just have to sometimes be a bit better about clearing in off the side. Like, they talk about it every year. They're like, oh, we're going to penalise people coming in the side. And in fairness, they do a lot of the time, but some of the times you're just there thinking, like, how is that not called? I just think that has to be top of the list going forward and forever, really, because if you're going, like, head on, like, if you're doing it with right technique, you should be fine. But it's just people coming in from the side. That's where I picked up injuries before.
So. I think Dan Levy as well was in from the side, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
What about your game? What are you, in your own mind, not to blow your own trumpet, what are you naturally good at? What are your strengths? And then what are the things that you have to work really hard at, or coaches might tell you need to improve on?
I think my reading of the game would be quite good. So just kind of even seeing things just before they're about to play out and just trying to be in the right place at the right time. I suppose it's a pretty general thing to say, but...
No, that's interesting, because it's actually a hard thing to measure statistically and, you know, to watch a game and know who's seeing things and who's not.
Yeah. So, like, I've always considered myself to be quite fit, so just to have that kind of level of, how would you say it even, just to have that engine for 80 minutes, kind of not give up sort of thing. But then there's plenty that I can certainly work on, and I've been told plenty of times, and try to work on it with coach. Like, so when I first came onto the scene, my carrying would have probably been one of my main strengths. And in the last couple of years, probably come away from that a bit, just trying to worry about certain things, like, yeah, making, getting there to the breakdown first, making sure we get clear and secure ball. It's making the right decisions at the right time, making sure that I can get involved in all aspects of the game, not just certain parts. So sometimes I would have found myself just kind of going through games and, yeah, having plenty of involvements, but not real impactful involvements. So, and one of the main things for that would be, obviously, anytime you do carry the ball, to come on to it at pace and kind of good leg drive and things like that. So that's certainly something that I've chatted to plenty of coaches about in the last kind of year or two, and something that I'm trying to work on all the time. Some people like Dwayne Peel and coaches like that, Dan Soper at Ulster, have been trying to help me in the last year or two to improve on that. And I've seen glimpses of it, definitely, but it's something that I definitely need to work on. So it's one of the things I would have spoken to, say, Andy Farrell about when he rang me around Christmas when I wasn't picked in the squad. He said, like, I can't fault your effort. I can't fault the effort you're putting in games and kind of you're keeping going and stuff, but it's not just trying to stay on, say, a level path for the whole way. It's kind of spiking at certain points, whether that be on both sides of the ball, attacking or defending, just being more impactful in the game. I was just going through it. So.
So instead of a perfect 7 out of 10 for the whole 80 minutes, maybe a 6 out of 10 for part of it and then hit a 9 out of 10 here and there.
Yeah, exactly. Just realizing that, say, for example, we're talking about clean ruck ball and speed of ball and things like that. Like, I don't have to take that on myself to do it for the whole entire team, get to every single ruck and maybe not be as impactful. Like, so securing ruck ball and things like that. But then in other facets of my game kind of dwindling away, it's kind of being able to contribute in all areas of the game, not just one.
It's interesting what you said about the carrying there. Certainly for a large part of your career, you would have heard Joe Schmidt talking about being the 60% man when it came to, you know, if you're carrying into contact, you've got to, it's really important you recycle the ball. Maybe you kind of forget in the midst of that, actually, maybe I should try and beat a man here or make more yards, and I'll worry about the breakdown and the ruck when I'm brought to ground a little bit more. I wonder, is that part of your thinking as well? Because the breakdown was such a part of those Irish teams.
Yeah, definitely. I came into play for Joe in 2011, and then it got to about 2013 and Matt O'Connor came in, and I really flourished, I think, under Matt, because he wasn't about, like, look, there's a lot of positives and a lot of negatives with the way Matt played the game. Like, he wanted to attack the whole time, and there wasn't so much emphasis on, like, the 60% man sort of things. It was very much trying to beat people, footwork, things like that. And, like, we trained that the whole time, and I thought, like, that definitely helped my game on that side of things. And then maybe when you go back to Joe's sort of coaching, it was a lot more structured. It was not so much about you. It was more about the group as the collective. And as you said, 60% man. And sometimes you don't have to go into contact to try and smash through someone or try and beat them. It's more about, if you can give us clean ruck ball now with your actions on the ground, we can get it and then beat them a phase or two later by just stretching the defense. And so I suppose it's the perfect storm of being able to do both.
Yeah.
Certain times, obviously, you're not going to, like, very good defenders, or you just don't get the ball at the right pace. You're just not going to be able to beat people. And it's about recycling and doing it well, but it's not always about doing that. Like, I think that's one of the things that, look, I'm going on a bit here, but probably the Irish team from 2018 to around the World Cup there, we didn't really develop. We stayed in that place where we were so good at being structured, and we were able to break down teams because they just couldn't deal with how quick our ball was and the structure of that. But then when teams started to kind of adapt and realize how they might be able to beat us, we didn't develop from there. So it's definitely about continuously developing and being able to mix, like, different styles of play, not just stick to one because you know you're very good at it. It's about developing the whole time because everyone else is developing, trying to beat you.
Yeah. 2019 was maybe a perfect storm in a bad way in that respect, in that the Irish team had become so good at what they were doing. And, you know, it's not like when the calendar year went from 2018 into 19, anybody, media included, were saying, well, we really need to change what we're doing here and start playing a different way. You know, it was working so well. And what often happens in a World Cup year is other teams really sit down and look at other teams. And with Ireland number one in the world, that was going to happen in a big way. And I have some sympathy because I suspect come summertime, when it was really apparent post Six Nations that, you know, a bit of a change up might have been good. Geez, you're on a tight turnaround there. Like, you're not going to perfect a new style of play too easily in that time frame.
You're pretty much spot on there. It's hard to come away from something when you've been so good at it and it's been working so well. And like you said, number one in the world, beat the All Blacks, Grand Slam. And then you come back and you think, right, well, we just need to do that better. But then people try and develop ways to beat you, and they were doing that. And then, yeah, it did come to the summer, and it was very much, God, I don't know if 2 or 3 months is going to be able to change this. And then so much faith in someone like Joe, because, to be honest, he's been the greatest Irish coach of all time. Like, we've had unprecedented success under him, and you just think, right, well, we'll just stick to what the main man's saying. And unfortunately, it just didn't work because other teams just really raised their game. And like you said, we had a bit of a bullseye on our back because we were number one in the world, and people want to knock us off our perch, and unfortunately they did, but that's just the way it went.
He always liked you. It felt, you know, at Leinster, he gave you your chances. 2015 World Cup, you went to that. Yeah, you were on the pitch. You started the Chicago game against the All Blacks. There was a real sense he trusted you to carry out the job, the detailed job he would lay before the team. 2019, when he gives you that quick phone call to say, look, I'm sorry, you're not in. Was that a big surprise to you, or did you feel you were touch and go to be in anyway?
Well, if I'm being honest, I looked at the kind of, there must have been six or seven of us, and you knew Pete was gone, CJ was gone, Josh was gone, and then Jack Cohn, and you probably thought was gone just because he'd been playing so well the previous season. So I thought it was kind of between myself, Reese, and Tommy O'Donnell. So I always knew that the phone call was possible to come, but and it did, unfortunately. Like, he rang me on my Irish number, which I nearly did. So I've had a UK phone the last kind of year and a half, 2 years, and that's the one I use 99% of the time. But on that day, I was kind of like, I better just turn on my Irish number just in case. And unfortunately, he ended up ringing that phone. So, it was tough. Like, I don't know, it's probably the worst feeling I've ever had. Like, I've been dropped plenty of times before, but I suppose it was a mix of a lot of things. Like, when I decided to leave Leinster, it was around the November series of 2017. Yeah. So he'd rang me and just said, look, you're not playing enough. Need you to play more Champions Cup and things like that. And I kind of knew, right, well, if I want to play for Ireland, I could see the World Cup on the horizon. I was like, I need to make a move. So that was playing in my mind. That was one of the main reasons why I knew I had to leave. And then you kind of spend 18 months and felt like I was playing some pretty decent rugby. And then you go through the whole summer camp for the World Cup and feeling in good shape. And you're kind of there thinking you're like literally one step away. And unfortunately, you just fall at the final hurdle. And yeah, it was tough to take because I'd been to a World Cup. I know how special that is to go. Been a goal of mine. Well, it's always been a goal of mine to go to World Cups. And even after the last one, I was like, I'd love to go to another one. But really set in stone in my mind for the kind of 18 months, 2 years before. And then to be told that you haven't quite made it, that's pretty rough. So, it was a rough kind of week or two. Mm. Rough for my poor fiance, Laura, as well.
I'm sure it's horrific. I presume when you see your Irish phone ringing and his name comes up, you think to yourself, well, you're not ringing me to tell me I'm in.
No. I think that's only happened once in the history of Ocean phone calls, and that was to Tommy Bowe before the 2015 World Cup. Someone was telling me. So now I had a feeling. I just answered the phone. I was barely said hello, and he was like, yeah, this isn't a phone call I want to make. And I just didn't say anything. I just let him talk for 2 or 3 minutes, and there wasn't much to be said. I wasn't going to be kind of having an art kind of...
Yeah, you're not going to change his mind.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You obviously went out, and then I think you hurt your rib as well. And the Russia game, was it? You had very little time when you went out. And so was the experience... I don't know what adjective to use. Was the experience good in any way?
Yeah, I suppose culturally the experience is pretty... pretty good in Japan, but it was a strange one. Look, like, obviously to not be in, and then 3 weeks later, like what happens in rugby, someone picks up an injury and you get called upon. And so Dan rang me. I was meant to play Ospreys on a Friday night, and Dan McFarlane rang me as I was having a coffee in the morning and just said, Joe Schmitz rang there. Jack Conan's picked up a knock, and so he's going to fly someone out tomorrow after the Japan game or whatever. Mm. So he didn't say it was 100% going to be me, but he just said that there's a good chance I can't play it tonight and you've just got to wait. So that was a pretty nerve-wracking kind of 24 hours waiting for that phone call. But yeah, look, flew out, was obviously very excited to be there. as I was on the phone to Joe on the Saturday, I think it was, that Japan game was, and he just said, look, be out here by, I don't know when I got there, maybe it was Monday, and he said I was going to be playing on the Thursday, so I knew there wasn't much time to kind of get my head around things, which is probably a good thing, because I knew I had to try and knock the jet lag as quickly as I could and just get back up and running with the plays and stuff. So some of the boys sent me across some stuff through WhatsApp and kind of tried to learn things on the flight over. Yeah, look, like adrenaline was getting me through that game. I was wrecked, but I was just excited to be there. Even on the walk out and you hear the World Cup music and you're like, this is incredible. Like 4 or 5 days ago, I was sitting at home watching one of these games and actually playing in it. But yeah, about 25 minutes in, whatever happened, I was stuck in the mall and I just got hit in the side by one of the Russian fellas, and I just felt something go, and I knew straight away, and I was kind of like, I popped ribs before, but this was pretty bad, and I was just thinking, right, let's try get to half time here. So this is about 20-25 minutes in, so I can definitely get to half time. And then maybe 3 or 4 minutes later, I was running around and there was a ruck and the ball kind of came out, and it was between me and a Russian fella, and I was maybe half a meter closer to the ball than he was, and I couldn't get over to the ball, and I just kind of knew, like, I'm not much use here. Like, he just picked up the ball and kind of ran around me, so I just had to call it in then, which was very disappointing. Like, I, in the change room, I was kind of thinking, I can't believe this is happening. Like, I've got here 72 hours before and I might be on a plane back in a day or two. Anyway, I got a scan, and whatever I'd done to the cartilage and stuff and the ribs, they managed to just keep me there and just look after me for the 2 or 3. Like, I could have played a game, definitely, but I wasn't fit by any means. Yes. But I just kind of just grinned and said that I was fine every time I got poked and prodded at by the physios, which is what you have to do if you want to stay there. So anyway, look, it was an experience. It was just a strange one. Obviously, it wasn't the fairy tale ending we would have all liked, but I still got there, so I suppose I can take some comfort in that.
Schmidt was such a big part of your career. Do you send him a message of any kind? Do you say anything to him? Or is professional rugby one of these strange environments where it's like we're all passing ships in the night in a way and don't say too much to each other?
Well, I haven't spoken to him now since we got back from the World Cup, but straight after that New Zealand game, I just went over to him and just said, like, thanks a million, like, it's been great. And he straight away said, no, thank you for 10 years. So
it's a long time.
Yeah. And when he said that, that really kind of hit home. I was kind of like, wow. Yeah. Like, I can't believe he's, I suppose, been a big part of my life for the 10 previous years. Like, he gave me my first Leinster cap, as you say, gave me my first Irish cap. Like, I've coached me for near on 10 years. So, yeah, it was a strange one. I haven't spoken to him since now, but I'm sure next time we meet, we'll only have pleasant words to say to each other. Like, look, he was incredibly good coach, incredibly demanding coach, but I suppose to be that good, you've got to have incredibly high standards.
I had a quick glance at your Twitter before we finish up, and the two cultural giants of the COVID time have been Last Dance and Normal People, and you, Jordy Murphy, have not been immune to either. So I just have you finished Last Dance? I just finished it last night.
Yeah, I did. I watched it yesterday as well. So
you were all in on this. Michael Jordan as a teammate, would you absolutely fine with that? You'd have liked that? You'd have welcomed that? Or unnecessary?
I've been thinking about this. I tried to think about someone that I could probably compare to him with that kind of drive and the, like, everything he puts into it, and then the level of performance he was probably able to bring out any time he played. And the only person that I could think about, well, I've had some incredible teammates, but, like, someone that really, like, sticks in my mind, especially because, so it was Paul O'Connell, because he was captain when I first went into Ireland, and just to see his level of dedication, the fact he'd never leave anything to chance, was always doing extras to keep his body in check. Always doing extra video. Just anytime he said something, you listened. Any piece of advice he'd give you, you just make sure you take that on board, because guy's been a Lions Test Series captain. He's played for Ireland over 100 times. Just an incredible like athlete, incredible competitor. But then when I tried to compare him to, say, like Michael Jordan, but like I could actually get on with Paulie. Like people could get on with him. He was just an incredibly humble guy, an incredibly nice guy, funny, just... And then I couldn't really compare it, because you saw someone like Michael Jordan that could, yeah, he'd take people to new heights, but he'd also like, he did belittle a lot of people around him. Just didn't seem like the nicest guy in the world. But sure, whatever episode it was where he starts getting emotional at the end because he's like, this, if you wanted to do what I, like, if you wanted to be the best in the world, that's what you had to do.
I couldn't work out if his tears at that were that he still thinks, yeah, you do have to be an asshole and I'm sad that that's the way it is, or if maybe there was some part of him maybe thinking, well, maybe I didn't have to quite belittle people the way I did and there was a tinge of regret. I suspect he feels he did need to be more the asshole side, and but the tears were interesting.
Yeah, I think there were maybe tears because he still feels maybe a little bit misunderstood.
Yeah.
From where he was coming, but I don't know. Look, pretty incredible documentary though, to be able to have an insight like that. Like when I first heard about it and I was told it's documenting his last season playing for the Bulls, I thought, oh, that'd be great. But the fact that they were able to flash back to the previous kind of playoff years and other times in his life, it was just incredible.
Yeah. Steve Kerr is the hero for me.
Yeah, he comes up trumps there in the last two episodes.
And just like the perfect type of teammate that every team needs, and you need a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, he said it himself, didn't he? He was a role player and he knew that and he just kind of mastered it. Like I knew a lot about Steve Kerr because I love basketball and I've been watching, obviously, maybe the last 7 or 8 years really got into it. And yeah. Obviously, I knew about his coaching side of things with the Golden State Warriors, but like to see what he managed to achieve as a player as well, just shows you as well. Because I didn't really know that before. I knew he'd won a bit, but like his accolades are pretty incredible, and to be able to transfer that over to a coaching side of things is a pretty impressive guy. And even when you look at his humble beginnings and his family and all that trauma that he had growing up, it's a pretty incredible story as well.
Yeah. Normal People. Had you read the book?
Nope. I didn't even know there was a book until I started watching it.
Okay. I was going to ask you what you preferred. It's amazing the impact it's had. Like it is.
I know.
It's an insane effect on people. I don't know if it's because we're all in lockdown and feeling more emotional and vulnerable and thinking about things, or if it would have happened anyway, but it's just amazing.
Yeah. I thought it was brilliant. I didn't know what to make of it before watching it. I'd kind of seen one or two of the ads and I was thinking, I don't know if I'd be into that. And then...
all that kind of nudity and stuff. Were you ringing Liveline?
No, well, that wasn't quite me. I can't put on that good old lady voice. But yeah, no, I started watching it with Laura and straight away it was like, wow, this is pretty incredible. I suppose the acting is incredible. They're so believable, the two of them, and you're kind of rooting for them the whole time, but they can't communicate between themselves really. Like they can communicate about so many things, and then when it actually comes to expressing their feelings and stuff, they just can't do it. And I suppose maybe it's a bit relatable to a lot of people. So at some stages during the show, I was like, Jesus, more nudity here. I'm glad I wasn't watching it with my parents anyway. But it was a great show. Really enjoyed it.
I had seen Paul Mescal in the Gaiety like a month before lockdown in The Lieutenant of Inishmore, and he was fantastic. And he plays a very loud character who has no trouble expressing himself. Now he's a bit of a madman, but like real in your face character. It was brilliant. And I remember thinking, that guy's good. It's like the poor fella, you never see him on TV or anything. And now he's just exploded, but in a character that is so opposite to the one I'd seen him play, which is probably the real marker of an serious talent. What a weird experience for him in lockdown to go from obscurity to the most Googled man in the world last week.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tweeted because I saw he was on the Late Late Show, and I tweeted something like, the queue outside his house must be huge now when they hear that he's self-isolating alone. But yeah, it must be an incredibly strange feeling, like you said, go from, people didn't really know who he was. I saw the other day, it was kind of over 500,000 Instagram followers, and you just said it there that he's the most Googled man in the world last week. Must be pretty incredible, and to have to do it from the comfort of your apartment somewhere in London must be even stranger.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, listen, read the book actually over the next few weeks and see what you think. You get a lot out of it. It's kind of interesting to see the two side by side. So two more years at Ulster. I guess you hope things get back soon. And we wish you well. Stay safe. And Jordy Murphy, been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network.